Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. And before we get started with today's episode, I wanted to let you know about RebateJet.com. What is RebateJet? Well, it's a piece of software that I created that will help Amazon sellers get their products noticed. You can launch with promo codes, rebates. Not only that, but you can list your product for free on the RebateJet third-party marketplace. You don't pay a single penny unless you make a sale. And when you do, it's only a $1 flat fee per product. Try it today, RebateJet.com.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wees.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Seller Roundtable with Andy Arnott and Amy Wees. Andy is skipping school today. He's not here with us today, but that's okay. I'm covering for him. And I'm here with my friend Sajag Agarwal from Mavli. And, you know, he's the man when it comes to inspections. So we're going to get his story today. And anyway, without further ado, Sajag, it's great to have you.
Yeah, Amy, thanks so much for having me on, and super excited to talk and to provide as much value as I can.
Awesome. So why don't we start? We always start the show by just getting to know a little bit more about you, your background, where you grew up, where you live now, you know, whatever you want to tell us.
Yeah, definitely. So I actually grew up in a small town. It's a suburb of Chicago in Indiana. So it's called Chesterton. So hopefully I don't get stalked now. No one's looking up my address and stuff, but so I grew up in Chesterton, Indiana. It's actually home of the Dunes. And it's been actually a pretty crazy journey. So I started e-commerce like 10 years ago, and just super random. I was actually visiting my mom, and she was shopping in the outlet mall. And so I was bored out of my mind. I had nothing to do. And I just kind of ended up hanging out and went on eBay and started sorting from high to low. And I started, I was looking at the time for a cell phone cable, and I noticed you could buy 100 cell phone cables for like $200, and they were selling for like $5 each. And I was like, damn, well, this is really interesting. And that's actually how I got into e-commerce. It was just that incident. So I started buying bulk on eBay, reselling it on eBay itself. So like retail arbitrage. Then I ended up going wholesale manufacturing in China, reselling it on eBay again. And then shortly after, moving into more of, I was like, okay, hey, you know, I'm buying bulk, but I need to have like my own brand. So I reinvested all that money, put it into Amazon e-com. And that's when I started my first real e-commerce brand per se, and scaled that to about $2 million a year in about 2.5 years. And while we were building it, really, really struggled with supply chain quality control. It was a huge, huge problem for us. We had a lot of problems when it came to quality control.
Wait, you said you started actually on eBay and you were working with these electric cables and like phone cables, and you realized that you could buy them in bulk. You realized that you could get even better margin if you, you know, kind of started your own brand and put your own name on it and continued to sell them. But what you didn't tell us is what made you decide to move from eBay to Amazon? How did you have the Amazon epiphany?
Yeah. So eBay, my listing for on eBay was one of the top sellers for a lot of our keywords. Like you would type in the keywords, we would be in top 2-3 in the rankings. And excuse me, my voice is a little sore today. But at the peak, we were selling only maybe about 50 to 100 units a day. And it was also a low price product because we were buying arbitrage. eBay is a low quality site in general. And my kind of thinking was that, you know, on an e-commerce standpoint, if we wanted to sell our own products, if we're selling 100 units a day on a lower quality product, which is more volume driven, moving into like a more expensive product, building out my brand, that's not something that would be possible on eBay. So that's when I switched over to Amazon and I started researching, and I realized that Amazon had way more volumes than eBay can even imagine. And so that's when I decided, okay, hey, I'm going to build this brand, but it's going to be built on Amazon. And that was super early. That was when Amazon was just coming out. So everybody was kind of talking about, you know, what is like the common products? It's like the makeup brush and all that kind of stuff, like the basic stuff.
What year was that when you got started on Amazon?
Yeah, it was like 2014, 2015.
Okay, so yeah. Kind of like the initial, when private label first started to become popular, or just before then, really. Like, I think 2015 was when like there was a big mad rush to private label, but 2014, people were still kind of like figuring it out and just like early dabbling in the platform. So I remember I took a break from, I started in 2007 and it was just like merchant fulfilled, right? It was kind of like eBay, right? Where you're just figuring stuff out. And then I noticed when I came back to it in 2017 and started private label that it was a totally different platform. But lots more traffic and I can definitely see the difference there, especially if you're selling something electronic on from customers from eBay to Amazon. So now we know how you started your own brand and you guys grew really quickly and you had a supplier. Did you just have one supplier in China or did you have multiple suppliers? Talk to us about your relationship with your supplier, because all of us private label sellers, when we first get started, like we have these pen pal relationships with our suppliers and it, because we kind of don't understand what's going on. So talk to us about your supplier and your relationship with your supplier.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And just to kind of backtrack real quick, as far as like when we started, we really got lucky because private label is just becoming popular. So it wasn't very saturated. We went into one of the most saturated categories. And number two, everybody now is just getting into product customizations and building out, you know, their own kind of version of the product. We were doing that from day one. So that was one of the reasons we grew really quickly. And when it came down to our supplier, to answer your question, So at the time when we started the business, we only had one supplier. And so kind of what you said, we met them on Alibaba, had a little bit of this pen pal relationship, and they seemed really good. We got a first order from them. First order came out really well. We did inspections. We did everything. Then we did our second order with them. And when we went to do our second order, they said, hey, you know, we're really struggling with production manufacturing, and the quality started to kind of deteriorate a little bit. But again, I got a passed inspection. Everything went well. And then after that, what ended up happening is we placed a couple more orders from that supplier. And what we didn't know was what was happening in the background is that supplier was actually shutting down. So the employee counts were reducing pretty dramatically. We weren't able to track it because we had no visibility into the factory. So like a couple of orders in, we were like, hey, we need another order of this. And they were saying, hey, you know, we just like scaled down our production. We can't do any of your orders anymore. And we were like, oh, wow, like out of nowhere, out of the blue. But we don't have a supplier anymore and we have a product that's scaling. So at that point, we started looking at other suppliers and we started, you know, finding more suppliers. We were like, hey, we can't have this happen again. Maybe we should find one or two other suppliers. And we started looking at other suppliers. And that's when quality really started becoming a problem because previously it was erratic. It was going up and down with that supplier, but it was like somewhat manageable and it was not something like, it, you know, the quality was going down a little bit every order, but, you know, still within manageable means. But with the next order and the next suppliers we worked with, we vetted them out. We did factory audits. We, you know, checked their engineering, R&D capacity, things like that. And order quality was extremely inconsistent on a order-to-order basis. So we really got lucky with that first supplier, but moving into our future suppliers, it just didn't work out as well.
Got it. So that first supplier was actually kind of ramping down and was kind of shutting down and closing shop before your eyes, and you actually had to move to, you had to find new suppliers, which I think so many of us go through. You know, we have to find new suppliers or we don't know what's actually happening at our factories. And that can be really, really scary because, you know, especially after Chinese New Year, a lot of people don't realize that this is not the time to skip inspections because after Chinese New Year, a lot of the workforce doesn't come back. And the factory does not necessarily have the same capabilities as they had before. So anyway, you are back to your story. You're getting to this point. You're having to find new suppliers because you're selling like crazy. I mean, $2 million a year, like that's not nothing, especially not with basically one electronic product. So you really need to keep this thing in stock. And so you start finding new suppliers. And your quality becomes a problem. How do you know that quality is becoming a problem? What's happening in your business?
Yeah. So, I mean, originally we didn't know quality was becoming a problem. We started figuring out quality was a problem about 1 to 2 months after the production order came and was selling. And that's what made it so a little bit detrimental and dangerous as well, is because our lead time for our products were 90 days for some of our SKUs. And you know, you have a 90-day lead time, you have a 30-day shipping time for sea freight, and then you have maybe a 30 to 45-day turn time for the inventory. So at any given point, you know, we have like five and a half months of inventory in stock. So we have this entire train of 5 months of inventory coming, slowly moving. And all of a sudden, 2 months after our, you know, one of our orders, you know, we always have like customer service metrics and we have tracking and things like that. So we started noticing, hey, you know, our ticket volume is going up considerably. The more we sell, the more our tickets are going up, and it's not going up proportionally, it's going up exponentially. And we were like, hey, this is a little bit weird. And we started looking into it, and we started noticing a lot of customers started leaving negative reviews. We started having a lot of returns. We started having negative reviews come left, right, and center. And we had customers contacting us 30, 60, 90, even 180 days outside of the purchase period, asking us for warranty replacements or for a warranty claim. And that's very common in, you know, any product category, especially with electronics. You give a warranty, hey, you know, we're going to give you a 1 year manufacturer's defect warranty or whatever like that. And if the product looks completely fine and it's completely broken just for no reason, we kind of owe them a replacement. And so we started having warranty claims. We started having all of these different things just a couple of months out after getting a couple of bad orders. And then we were like, okay, hey, maybe just one bad order. And the next order came 45 days later, and we had more problems. And the next order came, and we were like, okay, hey, now this is like a big issue. So that's when the alarm bell started ringing, because we were like, hey, we have like 6 months of inventory sitting around. Like, this is like a year of our cash flow, right? And, you know, our margins are like 20%, 30%. So we're talking like a huge amount of money at stake, and these products are defective. And this was despite doing inspections. We were doing inspections every single order. A lot of our orders, we were doing mid-production inspections. We were doing everything by the book, factory audits on all of our suppliers once a year. Like, we're talking everything by the books, past inspections, no problems. And the orders are coming to our customers and they're completely defective. And that's when we started changing providers. So we started looking, we were like, okay, maybe we've got a bad QC provider. Let's go do another QC provider. And we went through like 2, 3, 4 different QC providers, pass, and still having these defective problems. And
so
that's when
inspections are passing. You're heading it off. You're doing the right thing. You're not just ordering from your suppliers. Your inspections are passing and you're still having these problems. And you're going, okay, what's going on? All right, well, maybe the inspectors are missing something. Let's just switch providers. Before this next order, let's use a different inspection company. And so you switch inspection companies and you're getting passes again. And you're like, okay, well, I guess you have to kind of take them at their word, because you don't live in China yet. Right. And so you have to take them for their word, and you're still having issues. And here you are with inventory you can't trust. You're nervous that, especially, you know, if you're switching, if you're working with a company and you don't have the right contracts in place, or an inspection is passed, well, then you can't get your money back, because the supplier's hands are clean, right? The supplier's, well, you passed the inspection. So, you know, there was no quality issues before it left the factory. It's your problem, right? And so you're stuck in this situation that a lot of sellers get stuck in now, where they have a past inspection, they are dealing with inferior products, they're having bad returns, stuff like that, or bad reviews, and they've got all this inventory that they cannot trust, especially today when you're sending all of your inventory to Amazon, you know, and you don't know. That's why in our first phase of launch in our program, we always have a friend or someone we know buy the product and look at it and tell us to, you know, message us, give us a call, send us videos, because we want to make sure that in between it leaving the factory and passing inspection and getting to that customer, that there are no issues. So we usually do that with 2 or 3 friends, you know, have them buy it, have Amazon ship it to them, have them look at it and tell us, is there anything, is the packaging smashed? Is there anything that would prevent someone else from leaving a 5-star review? And that's kind of how we head off quality control issues outside of being able to inspect it ourselves and trusting our inspection provider. So at what point At what point, because I really want to get into inspections and talk to you about inspections, but I think this is so important because this is how you learned what was going on, why you were passing all these inspections. So you ended up moving to China. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. And just to give a quick note about that, like this was not something like, you know, we weren't working to process or anything like that. This is something that, you know, we were doing, we thought we were doing right. And this is a supplier that we worked with. And a lot of our suppliers, like, you know, on those first few orders, they were fine. And then afterwards, they started having problems and more problems and more problems and things like that. And we weren't able to track that. So it's not something like we've had clients that reach out to us that have perfect orders on the extreme of, you know, the first bad order is the first order. And then on the other extreme, we've had clients who worked with the same supplier for 7 years and then all of a sudden ended up with a year's worth of defective inventory and had to shut down. So it really happens anytime. We just got fortunate that it was a little bit earlier on than later when we were operating really big. But when it came down to moving to China, so when those alarm bells started ringing and I was like, okay, hey, you know, what's going on with these products? Why can't we find the problems on the ground? Like we were seeing some issues where like some of our products, you know, they're electronic products. So you plug them in, they don't work. And we were seeing like a 3-5% defect rate where you just plug it in and they don't work. And it's like, okay, this is the most basic test. Like we're not even talking about wear and tear. We're not talking about customers using and abusing the product over 2 months. We're talking like the most basic inspection. And we did this several times, you know, ourselves. And we were like, okay, why is this happening? So that's when I went ahead and said, okay, hey, I can't trust the inspection companies. I need to go to China myself. And ended up moving to Shenzhen, China, lived there for 6 months, did all of my own inspections basically for a couple of months, monitored my inspection providers initially. And what I essentially found out was that in general, the inspection process is completely flawed. So first of all, most inspection companies only do a visual inspection. So they'll go to your factory, they'll go do a visual inspection of your product. They'll say, hey, the products look good. And the thing is that, you know, even the most simple products like a wooden shelf have tests you want to do on the product. Like, hey, you know, do they support the right amount of weight? You know, are they built properly? Things like that. And inspection companies are basically just looking at this wooden shelf and they're like, hey, it looks good. Like just to give you an example, like we did an inspection for a strainer. It's like one of those pasta strainers. And, you know, to anybody looking at it, they're like, hey, you know, it's just a pasta strainer. If it looks good, it's fine. You know, there's probably not going to be any issues. There's 14 different tests we did on that pasta strainer, including like, hey, does the handles bend off if you put too much pressure? You know, things like that. Is there enough water flow? Is there, you know, is the surfacing, you know, done right? There's a lot of things to look into more so than just a visual inspection. And a lot of those things have to be done via product tests. The second thing I noticed is that those inspection companies that do product tests, they literally only do them on like 2 units, 1 unit, 3 units. In fact, you can go to some websites, I can't name them because they're going to come after me. If you go to like some companies, their inspections and take a look at their website, they literally tell on the website, hey, we only check 3 units for function, or we check 1 unit for function. And the companies that say, hey, we check a lot of units for function, or we check a lot of things for function, they don't actually calculate the right amount of time for the inspection. So they'll tell an inspector, hey, you know, you have 8 hours to do this inspection and we need you to go look at 400 units. And the inspector will get to the factory and they'll say, hey, I only have time to look at maybe 200 for these tests. So I'll look at 400 visually, I'll open them, but I'm only going to do function tests and maybe 50. And that's what ends up happening. And there's no accountability. There's no visibility into the process, what happens. And inspection companies and the management behind them are inherently flawed. And number two, the inspections themselves are flawed because the management is not being done properly and inspectors are used to all these kind of problems when the inspection process happens. So it's a very common practice. So that's what we noticed. And then, so I started doing my own inspections and we started noticing, hey, we had problems, we have defects, we have these issues. And I was like, okay, hey, you know, maybe we have this under control. Let's, instead of using a third-party inspection, let's bring our own in-house team. And that's when I hired my own team in Shenzhen. And we built out an office. We had about 6 full-time employees at our peak in Shenzhen. And what we noticed is a lot of our employees started getting all buddy-buddy with the factories. So they started going doing a lot of inspections with the factories. At one point, one of them received a Christmas bonus from the factory, which is like, hey, you know, why are you getting a Christmas bonus of like several $1,000s from the factory? And we started noticing a lot of weird, erratic behaviors. And all of a sudden, our inspections went from fail, fail, fail to like semi-pass, 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 semi-fail, pass, 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 pass. And we were like, okay, hey, I guess everything is improving. You know, we're getting better quality control. But lo and behold, We didn't have the visibility or the know-how to know, okay, hey, on the ground, these inspectors are not doing the process properly, and there's no accountability for them because we were not an inspections company. We were an e-com brand, and we don't know how to do inspections. So that's what ended up happening. And that's actually what led me into founding Movly, as a little bit of a nutshell.
Got it. So I think it's so interesting that, that you were able to see that factories were giving bonuses, stuff like that. I think it's hard for any, company to maintain that, because, these inspectors are spending so much time with these factories and constantly they want to develop. There's a balance, right, between developing a relationship with that factory and making sure that, you're friendly with them, you're professional, all of that, and making sure that you're also remembering that you're working for that customer who is asking you to look at their products with an objective view and make sure that you're giving them a failed score if it deserves to be failed, that you're looking at all the products, that you're not taking time. So tell me how you learned. So you started doing your own inspections and you started realizing, you've told me this story before where you started realizing when you were doing your own inspections, what was missing from the inspector, because it was taking you how long to actually go through all of your products. Tell me about that. Because that, I think, is really key for people to understand if they were to go inspect their own products, what they might find.
Yeah, it's a good question. So a lot of people have this like unreasonable expectation, like, hey, opening my units, checking my products takes like 10 seconds. Like I just open it up, it looks good, quick inspection, through and through. And then they put a lot of pressure on their inspection companies. We've had clients do this to us. We've also, I used to do it. I'm the biggest guilty there when it comes down to that. But, a lot of people put pressure on their inspection providers. They're like, hey, this inspector should be able to do 400 units in a day. And the thing is that when it comes down to the actual time of an inspection, it takes a lot longer than you think. So when you're doing your own inspection, you first arrive at the factory, right? You have to go find a working area. And then you have to go take all the shipping cartons out. You have to put them aside. And then when you actually go do that inspection process, you have to open up all the shipping cartons, open up all the packaging, open up all the units, make sure you're not damaging the products. And an inspector, a good inspector, and when I was doing inspections as well, you really want to carefully analyze your product because, little grooves, little, pieces every now and then, even small little infractions, those can lead up to bigger defects in the future. So you want to monitor for that. And when you monitor for that, I apologize, getting calls left, right, and center here. But when you monitor for that, what essentially happens is that, you take the time, you do the inspection, and then you put all the info into the report. By the time you've done that, you're spending almost 2 to 3 times longer than you expect on like a per product basis. And in addition to that, what's also very important is the product tests. And those are really, really key when you're doing the inspection. And a lot of people don't budget for that. So they say, hey, doing an inspection per product, this is going to take 15, 20 seconds. When you start doing product tests, like wear and tear tests, safety tests, function tests, like you're plugging in the product, that can dramatically increase the inspection time. So when I did my inspection in China, I hired an inspector and they told me they were going to do about 315 units. They said they're going to do it in one day. When I went and did that inspection myself, and I know my product. So, when I'm doing an inspection, I know exactly what to look for, exactly how to test it, exactly what tests I want done, et cetera. And for that same inspection, it took me almost 2 days to do completely. So it makes a big difference. So when the inspector actually came to the factory, just to give you an idea, so I think this is the story you're referencing to. So at one point I literally went and monitored one of my inspectors doing an inspection in China. And the inspector was supposed to show up around 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning. I showed up around 8 or 9 in the morning. I wanted to make sure everything was ready before the inspector came. Inspector showed up almost 5 hours later, around 1 p.m., 1 to 2 p.m.
And this inspector did not know that you were there, right?
Yeah.
He had no idea that you were there.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, I didn't tell the factory that I was going to come that day. I just said, hey, I'm going to send an inspector. And then on the day of the inspection, I told the factory, hey, I'm going to be there. Or the day before, don't tell the inspector I'm going to be there. He doesn't need to know I'm the client. As far as I'm concerned, I'm just another factory worker. So they were like, okay, sounds good. So I show up at the factory at 8 a.m. I wait and wait and wait. I was just about to leave the factory. And then the inspector shows up around 1, 2 p.m. He's like, hey, what's up? And, you know, he starts talking to the factory staff and, you know, this is an inspection. And, for this inspection, he was budgeted 8 hours. For this inspection myself, it took me about 12 hours to do. I did it a couple of days before. And this inspector showed up at the factory 5 hours late into an 8 hour day, and then literally just went in, just brushed up a couple of units, opened them up really quickly, just went through it pretty quickly, didn't do any function tests on more than 2 or 3 units at a time, and managed to do the whole inspection, which took me 12 hours in a matter of 3-4 hours, and left around 5-6 o'clock the same day. So that was kind of my story when it comes to inspection times, I guess.
Got it. Yeah, that it's really crazy to think about, you know, if we were to inspect our own products, what would we inspect, and how, what happens sometimes when these inspectors are supposed to be there, what are they supposed to be doing and what's actually getting done. So I love that you were able to see this and you were able to discover the problems with inspections, and that really, you know, most of us, it would make us want to just quit everything altogether, but it made you want to start your own inspection company. So what made you decide to get into this instead of going, oh my gosh, I need to get away from this?
Yeah. I mean, if you told me 5 years ago that I would be in supply chain, I would tell you that you're crazy. So supply chain is probably like the most unsexy industry that I never thought I'd be in. I thought I was going to be in like smart home. I thought I was going to be electronics, e-commerce, all this kind of stuff. And I ended up in supply chain. So what ended up happening essentially is that after having that experience with Side, that was my previous brand, and having those issues on the product quality control standpoint, I started talking with a lot of different sellers. I went to conferences, I went to events and meetups, and I started talking with a lot of sellers, and I basically found out that this was like a super common issue. So if you didn't have it already, you're going to have it in the future. And if you had it early, then great. You learned your lesson the hard way, and you know, you're moving on from there. So, and when it came down to me personally, when I was building out my brand, I really hated my life for like a year or two, because I wasn't able to sleep at night. I was always worried. I always had this huge anxiety level, like, okay, hey, are my products going to come good? I have no idea what's going on. I hired my team, helped me sleep for 2 months. And then 2-3 months later, we started having more problems. It's actually more so 6 months. But yeah, you know, we started having more problems after that. So basically what I wanted to do is I didn't want anybody else to be kind of in that same position where you put your life savings, you know, you put all your money and you put your whole life basically to build this one company or this one brand, or, you know, to do whatever you're doing, and then have it all basically, you know, thrown away because of a couple of bad eggs. So that's why I started Movly. And I have a technical background. So I used to program servers. I used to be able to, I can code, and I know how to play Minecraft. I used to be a huge Minecraft guy. So gaming background as well. And basically I saw a lot of improvement areas when it comes to the inspection process. Excuse me. When it comes down to the inspection process. So for example, we can bring in body camera footage. We can use modern technology to actually track what the inspector does, how the inspection is done, and then leverage that to actually determine, okay, which inspector is performing, which suppliers are performing, et cetera. And leverage all of that to build a better inspection process. So that's actually how I got into Movly originally, is basically I was like, okay, hey, you know, there is a lot of room for improvement here, and I feel like I can bring that improvement, and there's no one else really doing it, so it might as well be me.
Thanks for tuning in to part one of this episode. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, SellerSEO.com and AmazingAtHome.com.